Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Mary Roach makes a return appearance to the John Williams Show here on WGN Radio. She's the author of some of my favorite books. Hi, Mary. It's John Williams. How are you this afternoon?
I'm fine. How are you, John?
Pretty good. New York Times bestselling author. She wrote Packing for Mars. Think about it. It's a book about that. She wrote Bonk. You think, what's that about, like animal sex? It's a book about animal sex. She wrote Spook. What was Spook about, Mary?
Oh, paranormal research. People trying to use science to investigate the possibility of the spirit or soul. So kind of interesting paranormal laboratory goings on over the years.
Bonk, Spook. She wrote Stiff about how animals die.
No, cadaver research. People, no animals. No.
Cadaver research.
No dying animals.
I love your titles as well as the book. And now Grunt. Actually, Grunt's been out for a while. It's out in paperback now. And if you don't have a copy of it, I suggest that. I don't know if this is summer reading, if this is something to take to the beach. I would. The Curious Science of Humans at War. She also wrote, it says here, author of Gulp. And Stiff. What was Gulp about?
Well, the subtitle was Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, so that was kind of a tour down the tube from nose to tail with some interesting stops along the way.
Exactly. I've thought about that conversation we had because there were some questions about that tour of the Alimentary Canal that I wanted to ask and didn't, and I don't think I will in this conversation. Let's talk a little bit about this.
Oh, John.
Well, okay. Can I just ask one question about that? Why is it that no matter what you consume, everything comes out the same color?
Oh, but it doesn't.
It kind of does.
I can't speak for you, yeah. But what's more interesting to me is, like, so why does some of it float and some of it sink? There's papers published on that. There's scientific debate on that. Is it the fiber or is it trapped gas? What's causing it to float? Anyway.
See, that's why I didn't want to ask.
Sorry.
Well, what made you decide to go down this other road, writing about the science of humans at war? What sort of tipped you that there'd be something there?
I was reporting a story in India on the world's hottest chili pepper, and somebody told me while I was there reporting, hey, the Indian Defense Ministry weaponized this chili. They made a non-lethal weapon, kind of like a pepper spray, but an exploding chili pepper bomb. And I thought, well, I need to report on that. So I went over to their lab, and while I was there, they were working on all kinds of crazy stuff like that. They were working on a leech repellent, and there was the exploding chili pepper bomb. And I thought, wow, military science is kind of more esoteric and up my alley than I might have thought. I would have assumed it's just bullets and bombs and strategy, but there's all sorts of interesting.
Well, didn't the United States look into a stink bomb in World War II?
Mm-hmm. They sure did. Yes, they got the idea from the Brits, and it was to come up with a subtle, like a little spray that had a horribly penetrating, awful scent, and it was for the resistance elements, like the people who wanted to help without actually being in the military. So they would go up to German or Japanese officers and secretly spray them with this horrible smell that was guaranteed to be impervious to washing and dry cleaning, that it would rain wouldn't wash it away. And then the person would be humiliated and ostracized. And in that small way, they were contributing to the cause. So there was a tremendous amount of work that was done to figure out what is the most heinous odor and also how to deliver it. You needed a small kind of atomizer, like a little spritzer, but they had a lot of problem with what they call backfire. In other words, it would get all over the hand of the person spraying it. And if you sprayed it upwind, it would come back at you.
Right.
And so there was a lot of testing and back and forth. It was quite entertaining.
So you had like two groups of people working to win the war. Manhattan Project, stink bomb people. Manhattan Project, stink bomb people.
Yes, exactly. And in the end, the stink bomb was ready to go. Finally, they had it. Finally, this was years of work, back and forth testing, figuring out how to, you know, how to package it, how to deliver it. And then it was ready to go. And the final report came out just a few days before the first atomic bomb was dropped. So the stink bomb was eclipsed by the larger and more penetrating bomb.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, though, it's you're right, though. I mean, we think when we think about war as, you know, men and women now go, you know, fighting and some of the awesome technology. But when you talk about the science behind it, I was intrigued by how much thought has to go into the uniforms that soldiers wear. And you don't think about that.
Yeah.
But my goodness, you wrote a lot about that. What did you learn when you wrote about that?
Well, I was over at Natick Laboratories in Natick, Massachusetts, and they have entire departments that will that are testing the flame resistance of the fabric, and somebody else might be working on the insect repellency, and someone else is working on a super shedding fabric that is, you know, if you're, it's chemical weapons that it would roll right off. And then each of those treatments for the fabric has to interact okay with the other ones, which is really difficult, and it can't wash off in the laundry, the Army laundry, which is especially vigorous. Plus, it has to come in under budget. It has to look okay and feel okay. And it's actually this, plus they've got fashion designers there. They've got a fashion studio. So they're just, you look at those uniforms and you think, I don't know, it just sort of looks like pants on the top.
Yeah.
But a lot of complicated.
Well, and it depends on what the soldier's doing. So you say, okay, so you're in the infantry. Okay, good. Well, then everybody, here's your uniforms, go fight the war. And they say, yeah, but I'm a sniper. And a lot of the uniforms have Velcro. Well, if it does, and I go, when I pull off my shirt or try and loosen the cuff on it a little bit, the enemy will hear that. So how can I make a functional but quiet uniform for that guy?
Exactly. And that's the situation where Velcro would have been great, because if you're a sniper, you're spending long periods of time lying on your belly, on your front. So buttons and zippers would be uncomfortable. So the fashion designer that I spoke to there was working on a sniper top. She had moved it to a side entry. So it's kind of the buttons or zipper would be on the side. And we couldn't use Velcro for the reason that you just stated. So the challenges, there were things you wouldn't really give thought to unless you had sat down with a sniper and said, what
right.
bothers you about your outfit? Also pockets on the chest, that doesn't work because you're lying on your chest, so the pockets were moved to the arms. Yeah, really interesting mindset.
Mary Roach is on a line. Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War is her book. It's in paperback now. If you're traveling this summer and want to read, that's just, you could skim it, you could skip chapters, you could read it front to back. It's fascinating. About halfway through, you wrote about, just on this topic of uniforms, how, I don't know where we are on this, Mary, your book is in paperback now, but are they still working on that sort of exoskeleton like we saw maybe in the movie Alien? Remember that?
Yes, yeah.
What's the status of that?
That's got a ways to go. The last I checked in, there was an exoskeleton that had been tested. It was great for, you know, you had sort of a hydraulic support of the, you know, if you had a heavy backpack and a lot of weight to carry, it was great. But the problem, there were a couple of problems. The battery life tended to be not much beyond 5 hours, and you couldn't go more quickly than 2.5 miles an hour. So, you know, you're out in rugged terrain. Also, if you fell over, it was difficult to get back up. So those things alone, it didn't appeal to the average soldier.
Yeah.
It seemed more an encumbrance than a help. But it'd be great if you're, say you're working on a ship, you're in the Navy, and you've got to unload a lot of things. It would help you just standing and lifting and carrying things. It would be helpful. Also, some of those are being tested for people with disabilities, to help with walking, and, you know, because they support your body weight. So there's some civilian applications for some of those systems now.
Well, what's the weight that the average soldier has to carry?
Oh, it depends on who they are and what their mission is, but they might be carrying close to 100 pounds. And that's including in body armor. The body armor itself is 20, 30 pounds. And if you're carrying a heavy, depends on what, you know, if you're infantry or what you are, but if you maybe, you know, say you're running across the courtyard with a machine gun, fats, and it's a hot day, and you're exerting yourself. It's a dangerous scenario in terms of heat injury and heat stroke, which can be fatal.
Well, did you say in here? A soldier can lose up to 20 pounds of moisture in a day.
You can sweat that much. There was a guy who wrote an entire book on sweat and perspiration, and that was the finding that soldiers in hot, particularly in humid climates, where you can't cool yourself effectively. The air is saturated, so the sweat isn't doing its job and going into the air and cooling the body. The amount of fluid loss is tremendous. And if when you're sweating, you're using plasma from the blood. And so if you're sweating a lot of your body fluid, there's not going to be enough to power, to feed the muscles that are doing the work. And so there's this competition in the body for the fluids that all these different components of it need, and you can end up, your body sort of shuts down certain parts that it thinks you don't need, and they can turn fatal. So it's a big concern for units operating in high heat.
Stuff like this, the firing of frozen chickens out cannons, and all of the other things that comprise the curious science of humans at war. Grunt's Mary Roach's book. I got to go, Mary, but are you working on a new single syllable topic?
No, I'm a woman without a book right now, but I'm open to suggestions. I backed out of a book topic idea, and so now I'm bereft. I don't know. I'm adrift at sea. I don't have a book to work on.
What was the topic you decided not to do?
It had to do with natural disasters and more of the human elements. How do you rescue someone from rubble? How do you deal with all that stuff? But the logistics of it were pretty daunting.
I'll help you if I come up with another title or a topic. I'll let you know. But in the meantime, go get one of her other books. And the one I've got in front of me is Grunt. It's nice to talk to you again, Mary.
It's always my pleasure. Thanks, John.